is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. We've got it all on this Overreaction Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. The good, the bad beats, and the ugly. Will the real worst quarterback in the NFL please stand up? Welcome in. Alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi out there in Jersey, I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. In about 30 minutes, we'll also be joined by Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. And in hour two, our senior NFL analyst, Mike Pritchard. What a week four we have had in the NFL, Michael, and it's not over yet. Still Monday Night Football to come, but heck of a Sunday.
It really was. Interesting Sunday. You know, a lot of games in the early window, not great games in the late window. The Charger-Raider game was interesting in the second half, but, you know, and then the night game last night. I mean, you know, when it was 20-0 or 17-0 early after the Jets gained, after the Chiefs gained 200 yards in the first quarter, I think this is coming to an end. And all of a sudden, Mahomes starts doing unlike Mahomes things. If I were at the Chiefs, I got to say this to you, Stormy. If I were at the Chiefs, this whole Taylor Swift thing to me seems to be more of a distraction than it needs to be. Like, it's a self-inflicted wound on our team.
See,
I think it needs to kind of like, I think it's like getting in the way of us being what we need to become.
Michael, my only counter to that would be that this is a Kansas City Chiefs team that has played in and won Super Bowls. So if you're telling me having a celebrity in the building is a bigger distraction than all of the rigmarole and like fanfare that goes around a Super Bowl, I can't buy that. Like, grow up a little bit, maybe.
It's an attention vapor, right? And so I know they can deal with it, but there's a lot of stuff going on that to me seems like you lose your focus. Like, just think about it. If you're Kelsey and you know she's coming to the game, I mean, there's a lot of planning that goes into this. Like, she just doesn't show up with her clear bag walking through security. Like, you got to get the plane. You know, you got to do, there's a lot of things that you have to do outside your life that become a little bit of become harder. So I don't know. I think the focus isn't there. And it looked like it last night. It looked like it for a quarter. And then all of a sudden it went away. And as good as they played defensively, I think not having Nick Bolton out there really hurt them, especially last night. And Zach Wilson, played his best game. But when the game was on the line, when it's 20-20, from that moment forward, you know, they really couldn't do anything. They could not make a play offensively. And, you know, he had the fumble. And then when you break down the game, you know, when you break down the rest of the game from that moment forward, I think he was 6 of 7, you know, 6 of 7 for like 17 yards. I mean, that kind of kills you when you go in there. What was he? Oh, excuse me. He's 4 of 7 for 16 yards. After they tied the game, they ran 13 plays. He gets 3 first downs. And they're 4 of 7 for 16 yards.
So I do think it was an interesting game, Michael, because like you referenced, like the Chiefs get out to this kind of guns a-blazing start. And you look like this Jets defense is just totally checked out. But then as Zach Wilson started to play better, it's almost like defensively they realized, okay, we actually might have an opportunity if he's going to play like this all game. They get reinvested. You have the Patrick Mahomes making the uncharacteristic mistakes. You talk about some of those football, just like floaters, wobblers right into the hands of the Jets defense. But then Zach Wilson does some things that you just kind of, I know somebody as that was sweating a Chiefs teaser leg in this spot that I was screaming at the end of the game, like, where is my Zach Wilson fourth quarter interception or turnover that we just feel like is due? And then we end up getting it on the botched snap. But overall, it was a really good game from him, Michael. You mentioned the best this season, but maybe the best that he's had since he's been a starter in the NFL, honestly, given the caliber of defense we know that Kansas City has had. And not only did he look different, Michael, but he sounded different too. I'm curious your reaction to his post game.
I thought he sounded different. I thought he looked different. He looked more confident. He didn't look like the weight of the world was on him. And the other thing I think helped too is his offensive line, I thought, played their best game. What shocked me after watching the game and then watching again this morning is when I started to work on this week's and work on the show is how are the Jets a 2.5-point dog to the Denver Broncos, who might have the worst defense I've ever seen in my life? How is that? I know they're playing in Denver, but didn't the Jets do enough yesterday to think that they're the better team?
Michael, there are a couple of lines
or
like
you
that.
Think there's a,
go ahead.
Or do you think this is the Zach Wilson is just going to be a disaster?
Well, so I that's the question, right? Is what we saw this week evidence that Zach Wilson can move forward in a positive direction and that Nathaniel Hackett's dialed up some things that can have him have success? Or was this the anomaly and then he's just going to go back to what we have largely seen from Zach Wilson? But you have that line, Michael. And then another one that intrigued me a little bit was the Bengals Cardinals line looking ahead to next week. And I know they did make an adjustment on the initial look ahead where it was an 8.5-point spread, but then reopened yesterday 5. And based on the things that I've seen from the Arizona Cardinals and what I've seen from the Cincinnati Bengals, that was another line where I was like, are we sure that that's the right number?
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I circled it down when I wrote it. I thought that to me, this Arizona Cardinal team has proven they've played well. I think Joshua Dobbs has played better than a lot of guys drafted in the first round. You know, he wasn't the problem yesterday. Look, they gave up 14 points in the fourth quarter, and you know that they're a tough team to play. Let's face it, San Francisco. When the quarterback only throws one incomplete pass, it's hard to slow them down. But you know, I think we're undervaluing Arizona. I don't think the solution for the Bengals is going to happen overnight. I really don't. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be really hard for them because they're in one formation. Now they lose one of their best players in Pickens, and so they lose the outside receiver, Higgins. I'm sorry. I'm thinking Carl Pickens, who used to play this, looks the same when he was at the Bengals. But they lose Higgins, and they can't run the ball. They really don't want to run the ball. And their offensive line is a disaster. So how does this get fixed? And Arizona just is going to keep playing hard. They don't give up.
And, Michael, to bring all of this back to the Jets game, Zach Wilson, through four games, has better numbers than Joe Burrow. And that's not something that I saw on my bingo card or would have predicted based on what we've seen to this point. And again, in that game yesterday against Patrick Mahomes, you put those numbers head to head and he outplayed Mahomes. If you look at Opta Stats, Wilson is officially the only opposing quarterback to have more completions, more passing yards, and touchdown passes, as well as fewer interceptions than Mahomes in a Mahomes start ever. And that's college or pro football, 127 total starts, including the postseason. That is a wild, wild thought based on what we saw in this game. And I know I got your opinion briefly on Zach Wilson sounding different. I want the people at home to hear it because we know last year, last November, the soundbite that made the rounds was the question asked to Zach Wilson, do you think you let your defense down? And he, without hesitation, said no, moved on to the next question. Hear him last night.
Yeah, that's on me. Critical situation. I can't have a play like that. I cannot drop the ball, you know, and this team is sacrificing a lot. You know, guys were making plays. Defense was making plays. O-line was protecting. Receivers were making plays. And to be driving right there and to drop a snap, you know, I cannot do that.
The maturity just sounds so much different than what we heard last year, Michael.
I agree. And he played different and he's something to build on, right? Something to build on. And I think it's a giant step forward. But the elephant in the room is still their defense. They gave up 400 yards. Yeah. They gave up 200 yards. We said on the show Sunday morning, if you're taking the Jets in the 9.5, you're relying on Andy Reid to stop running the ball. Now, he had 35 carries in the game for over 200 yards. And 51 of them came from Mahomes. So they didn't stop running the ball, but had they run it even more, I'm sure they would have. Like, where is this Jet defense that's supposed to be elite? I keep looking for it. If you're going to win with Zach Wilson, if you're going to win, your defense has got to play really good. Now, they did in the red zone. This game's only close because the Chiefs were 0-for-4 in the red zone.
I was laughing last night and I tweeted about it, Michael. I tweeted at you. Like, I loved how on the social media you were yesterday. You were doing your best Twitter Femi. And that was one of the comments that you made was about the Jets defense. Like, can somebody please talk about it finally? And unfortunately for the Jets defense, Michael, that Sauce Gardner penalty late in the game with what should have been, looked like it was going to be Patrick Mahomes' third interception. He gets called. And then obviously that sets up the Chiefs too, which RIP Chiefs backers for Patrick Mahomes running and sliding at the two. So you don't get the cover on the big number there. But that was one issue where I felt like the Jets defense actually was good. And it stunk that that's the call that happened in that spot.
It did, but it should have been offsetting penalties, in all honesty. I mean, because there was a hold in there too, right? I mean, there was a bad hold in there that got away with it, and it should have, and that should have been offsetting. I thought it was, look, I know this. We could spend all day Monday talking about bad calls. You want to know bad calls? Did you watch the Raider game? They called it Jacoby Myers for offensive pass interference. The last play of the game, the guy pushes off the corner. They don't call that play. They call Jacoby Myers for a crackback block when he was blocking the support guy in the run game. There was never, even Trent Green said, there's no crackback here. That cost the Raiders 3 points. So which again, no excuse. The Raiders lost the game, turned the ball over. They deserved to lose. Not suggesting that. But when you start playing that referee got in the way of the game, we could do it for every game. We could do it for every game. Like we could do it every, like, why didn't they call this? Why'd they call that? I mean, you could just sit around. You waste your time. It's like filling out the forms to judge the officials after a game when you're in the league. You're wasting your time. Yeah. They'll just laugh at you.
And I mean,
the
there's
Colt game, same thing.
I was just going to say, and there's pretty much a holding on every offensive play in the NFL. If we really take a deep look at it, that's just how it is. But I mean, officiating, coaching decisions, still so much more that we're going to talk about on the other side, including we haven't even gotten to the statement performance of this past Sunday. The Buffalo Bills looked pretty dang good against Miami. We'll get into that in a moment on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our daily email recapping all of the best bets from each of our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard as well to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand at any given time. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up for just $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line. And Michael, the Buffalo Bills yesterday with a statement division win over the Miami Dolphins never trailed in a 48-20 victory. It was the highest total on the board. It goes over. What impressed you more? The fact that Josh Allen now for a third straight game has played at an MVP caliber level after what we saw week one, or the way that the Bills defense was able to combat the team speed and everything offensively we know Miami's been capable of?
I think the latter, because I think Josh Allen has finally found the formula in himself, that he's now the point guard. He doesn't have to be the scoring guard. He can be the point guard, and he can distribute the ball to a lot of different players and make plays. Plus, they're willing to run the ball, and they're not the Bengals today are what the Bills were last year. The difference is Burrow can't duplicate what Josh Allen could in terms of taking over the game with his feet. He can't move. The Bills, when they were doing that with Allen trying to be the main ball carrier and all that, they didn't really have an offense. They had a bunch of plays, and they relied on their talent. Now they're running an offense, and they're really hard to stop, and it's fun to watch. I mean, you know, they didn't run the ball that well yesterday, but they ran enough where you were off balance, and then he was sensational in the passing game. His accuracy is at an all-time high level, and I was really impressed. But to get Miami into 10 third downs,
yeah,
to get Miami and sack 2 of 4 times when you know the ball's coming out so quick, to hold Tyreek Hill, which we knew he was going to do. We knew McDermott had limited him to 18 catches for 170 yards in the last 3 games. What shocked me about this game, it wasn't close. Every other game has been close. But this Buffalo team, to me, even though I didn't think they were great on defense, they took the game over with their defense.
And I know some of the numbers with Miami are obviously skewed based on what they did last week in the 70-point performance. But if you look at the averages through the first 3 weeks, they averaged 43.3 points per game, 550 yards per game. They were 13 of 28 on third down with just 3 total turnovers and 1 sack allowed. Yesterday, just 20 points. And although Miami did still get their yards, 393 total yards of offense, 3 of 10 on third down, as you mentioned, 0 for 3 on fourth down, 2 turnovers and the 4 sacks. First team to be able to get Tua to the ground. The speed of the linebacking core, the things that they were able to do, Michael, defensively, they lead the league in sacks and takeaways. And they don't have Von Miller. Like, that's what is another thing that I think goes unnoticed. Like, their key cog on defense isn't even out there while they're doing this.
Yeah, I mean, and Leonard Floyd's picked up the slack. Leonard Floyd has been a great addition to this team. He's really been something that they need. But let's put it in perspective here a little bit. Okay, so yes, the Dolphins almost had 400 yards. But when you look at the set, they got 120 of those yards in the fourth quarter when the game was over. The game was over in the fourth quarter. And so, you know, the 3 drives they had in the second half when the game was over were 75, 63, and 64. So you're looking at almost 200 yards of the 300 that they got in the second half when the game was over. The scoreboard dictated the game was over. So credit to Buffalo. Then they lose Tre'Darius White, who wasn't playing great, but he's kind of the heart and soul of their team. And Bedford, the other corner, was out too. But they're able to do it. They packed the middle of the field. They put a lot of pressure on Tua, something, you know, we had not seen. He made mistakes. He did an overthrow. We've seen this before. Fumble. We've seen that before. And they couldn't get into a groove offensively. They couldn't keep pace. And we keep waiting for this, you know, we keep waiting for this Miami defense to turn the corner. They paid a first-round pick for Bradley Chubb. But Van Ginkle's had more production on terms of rushing the passer than Chubb has. Chubb's been non-existent in 4 games.
For Tre'Davious White, just because you mentioned that, I haven't seen an update on his MRI, but he is supposed to have one today. The fear is that it's a torn Achilles. And also with that depth kind of in the defensive backfield, DeMar Hamlin did get on the field for the first time yesterday. It was just special teams, but maybe if there's some issues, there could be opportunity for him to get involved. He has gone up from -110 for comeback player of the year to -250 after now having officially taken the field. So I think that's something to keep an eye on in that spot as well. And as for the division, Michael, like, what an important win that was for Buffalo. That's what I keep thinking about, especially considering Miami going into the game was a -160 favorite in the division.
Well, plus Miami went into Buffalo with perfect weather. I mean, could you have asked for anything better?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get Buffalo and you get them the 1st of October, your perfect weather, that's got to favor Miami, which is what I thought would and why I wanted to take the 3 there. You know, the one thing I want to throw out to you, and I'm sure you watch this game closely, Josh Dobbs for comeback player of the year. Now, I don't know what he's coming back from because he really didn't have a career, but this kid's playing really well. Like, he's not the reason. He's playing better than a lot of guys that were drafted in the 1st round, you know? And Hamlin, just to get on the field, deserves comeback player of the year. I get that. But Josh Dobbs, I don't even think he has odds to be comeback player of the year. But he, that addition to their team by him, trading for him, has been really impressive. I mean, he's made plays.
Yeah, and if he starts winning some games too, like I saw somebody write on Twitter yesterday, I want to say it was Pam Maldonado, a host here at VSiN, who said the Cardinals are the best team that's losing games right now. And Dobbs sitting there 28-1, they've been competitive. They've been scrappy. They have not looked like the team we thought that they were going to look like. So yeah, 28-1 for Dobbs, 9th on the odds board for comeback player of the year. Hamlin still your favorite at -250, and Baker Mayfield there at 15-1. I know we'll talk about the Bucks a little bit later, but might he be the best quarterback in the NFC South based on what we've seen so far? Let's talk about this Eagles Commanders game, Michael, because I want your opinion on what happened at the end of the game. The Eagles end up winning in overtime 34-31, don't cover, total goes well over, but if we go through the end of game situation, Eagles are up 31-24. Washington gets the ball back late. They drive down the field. Time's about to expire. Sam Howell connects with Jahan Dotson for a 10-yard touchdown. It's 31-30. So-called Riverboat Ron, instead of going for it and going for the win for the 2-point conversion, elects to kick the extra point and take this thing to overtime, despite his rationale post-game being that his guys were gassed. Because if you're gassed, why do you want to play more football? And go up against a defense that was just able to walk down the field. I don't understand that, but neither here nor there. How did you evaluate the end of game decision-making from Ron Rivera?
I think, you know, your point is well taken. Like, if you're exhausted, why don't we just get it all in one play, right? Let's just do it. Let's just get out of here in one play. But what bothers you more than anything is one of my criticisms of most of the times when you are making these in-game decisions is nobody's paying attention to the game. The Eagles had moved the ball in the second half up and down the field.
Yeah.
They only had the ball for 3 minutes and change in the fourth quarter and still had 10 points. You know, and this Washington defense was not very good. All day, it wasn't very good. The Eagles averaged 6.2 yards per play. The only drive that they were able to get off the field in the second half was they got backed up, their third and 12, and they missed a completion. But to me, why would you let Hurts, who's throwing the ball on you pretty regularly, you're getting no pass rush on him. Chase Young was really non-existent in the game. And why would you give him a chance to get the ball? And, yep, they had to go 10 plays. I think they got 34 yards. Plus, Stormy, Elliott's a really good long-range kicker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the chances are you're probably not going to if and then you get the ball first, which your team's already tired, right?
Yeah.
Your team's already tired. And you got three plays and punt it back. Now you're doomed. Now you're doomed. I thought, again, not a first guess. I think he had no choice. They were gassed on defense. They were on that drive was almost a 7 minute drive at the end of the game. They were gassed. They were tired. I think Philly would have called timeout once the ball got placed at the two so they could get their breath.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, if your team is tired, doesn't that mean the defense is more tired? And you should, that like furthers the point that you should go for it in this situation. And also reinforcing the fact, if you looked at the live odds board at the end of the game, the Commanders, Michael, when they went to overtime, despite getting the ball first, were a plus money price on the money line, plus 110. So I get that it's a 50-50 shot one way or the other if you want to finish it at the end of regulation or if you want to go for overtime. But it just felt like in that situation that your team would have been better off just trying to get the win in regulation. And this Commanders defense now, back-to-back games, they've let up 35.2 points per game the last two games, which is not nearly what we expected.
Last three, they've been over 30, Stormy. The last three games, they've given up over 30 points. I mean, look, you know, they kept them on that field. I mean, look, that was a 10-play drive to score that touchdown. You don't think the Eagles were exhausted on that 10-play drive?
Yep. And if you're Philly, it hasn't been pretty, but that's 4-0. A win's a win.
4-0.
Yep. They keep on rolling. Speaking of Philly, I'll maybe have to find out from the break, Michael, how you're handling this James Harden sitting out training camp situation for the 76ers. We got to hit the break here. The music's coming, but, you know, found it interesting.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Looking to be a better? Of course you are. And tens of thousands of people have already turned to Juice Reel. That's Juice, R-E-E-L, in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It is a tool, though, to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, and gives you an analytical edge backed by nearly $1 billion in bets from sports bettors all over the country. Use that data to follow the winners, fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool, Juice Reel. That's Juice, like orange juice, Reel, R-E-E-L. Absolutely free. Download Juice Reel to your iPhone or Android device today and become a better. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. We welcome into the show Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. And TG, we got a lot of games to get to, but I want to start from the book's perspective on Sunday Night Football, where obviously there's a ton of betting action coming in on the Chiefs here. What was the difference of emotions for you as a bookmaker seeing Kansas City go up 17-0 in a blink versus the late game situation where the Jets actually had a chance to potentially win and maybe even knock out those money line parlays for you?
Yeah, you know, that game, it was one where the Chiefs were getting bet all week. And you started to see a little bit of sharp money there come in on the Jets yesterday, but the public was all over the Chiefs in this one. So We really needed the Jets to keep it close. And as you said, I mean, the game did not start off that way at all. I mean, it looked like it was going to be a blowout after the first quarter. And then Mahomes has a really bad second quarter. And suddenly the Jets have some life in them. And honestly, for the way that that ended, the Chiefs don't get the cover. If you had them in a money line parlay, okay, that still cashes, but it saved a lot of parlays there with that. And on the spread, it was great. We did lose in play on that game. When the Jets actually came back and tied that game, I think you could get them +3.5 in play. So we had some people take some shots there, and obviously they got the win there by a half point. If you got them there at +3.5. But overall, it was still a decent result in the game, for sure, for those who bet pregame. And overall for the day, I have to say it was our best Sunday of the season so far for us. I know a lot of books were saying they didn't do too well because of how many favorites came through yesterday, but result wise, it was the best Sunday of the season for us so far. And before we get into the individual games, and I apologize for jumping around, can I just make a quick observation on college football from Saturday, if I can? I think we have enough data and enough of a sample at this point that for those who are betting college football, specifically those individuals who maybe are looking to back the Penn State Nittany Lions in a game, that at this point you probably have peace of mind that Penn State's coach, James Franklin, has your best interest and probably your wager's best interest at heart. So I think at this point we have seen enough of that, and that you should take comfort if you are a Penn State Nittany Lion better. Now we can go back to the NFL. That was just my quick digression in college football. But okay, so back to the NFL. Starting off the day with the London game, Falcons and Jaguars. I don't know if you guys have touched on this game or not yet. Obviously, a pretty easy victory there for Jacksonville. Most people were laying the points there with Jacksonville here, close 3.5. And you know, I was never really high on Spencer on Ritter. I'm sorry, on Ritter for the Falcons, and he has really just not shown us really anything at this point. You know, I know it was interesting coming into this year. You had some sharps that were fading the Falcons, and you had some sharps who were very high on the Falcons with their chances this year. But they're definitely, I think we need to see more from Ritter if they're going to have any sort of shot here this season. But so we didn't get off to a great start after that London game, but the early slate of games, the big winners for us were the Ravens game against the Browns. Again, that Watson news there with him not playing and caught a lot of people off guard there with the whole shoulder injury. And people were backing the Browns throughout the week. So we had a lot of advanced Browns money. So that really went our way there in that one. The Eagles Commanders game, good result there. Only thing I could have asked for more is if the Commanders had won that game outright. But the Eagles not covering was certainly a good one for us. That closed 8.5, and Philly wins 34-31 in overtime. So good result there. And the Bucks and the Saints, another good result there for us. People certainly taking New Orleans. They were bet up from 3-point opener up to 4.5. Were that close. So another decent result. With Tampa winning that one outright. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good results in the early slate. The afternoon slate with all the favorites winning and covering, not too much drama there. But we made it pretty much unscathed out of the afternoon slate. So, yeah, all in all, very good Sunday.
How about tonight, TG? What, I mean, I know you're a giant house, and well, let me, before we start, let's go to the Washington Philly game, because I know that was in the main board there at the Borgata.
Yeah.
What was the reaction when he decided to kick the extra point?
I think there was a lot of surprise there because almost everybody thought that he was going to try to end the game right there. So I know I was a little surprised that he was going to try to take it to overtime on the road in Philly. Now, I will say this for the Commanders. They have played Philly tough in Philly the last couple seasons. And, you know, this game for where it went off, you know, at one point it got up to nine, as high as nine, closed 8.5. Washington just always seems to play them tough, especially early in the season whenever they meet up. But the overall consensus, I think, was just shock from people that the Commanders didn't try to end it. And then probably some relief that, you know, it, especially if you had the Eagles in a teaser, you were hoping that, okay, if this game goes to overtime, that you can still cover your teaser and have that alive.
That was me. I was living and dying with the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday. I had the Eagles and Chiefs in a teaser, bringing those both down. So yeah, it was way
very popular teaser.
It was
very
way more teaser of a sweat TG than I anticipated it being for both of those results. But okay, let's get to tonight. Monday Night Football coming up, as Michael referenced, the Seattle Seahawks at MetLife Stadium against the Giants. For you guys, has the shift been similar as what we've seen across the country, where this thing opened around Pick'em and seen some Seattle money to where the Giants are now getting two at home?
Yeah, we're actually still 1.5. But as you said, it did move from a pick, early Seattle money. Today, some Giants money starting to come in here. So right now, as we stand, this game is very evenly bet here. Not much of a decision either way. A little bit more money here on the total. That's up to 47 from 45. But I think this is kind of do or die time here for the Giants. I think that's the way you have to kind of look at this game. You know, they can't start the season here with just another loss. So I know, Michael, you were looking at the Giants this week, kind of the same with that same calculus that this is almost a must-win spot for them.
It has to be. I mean, they can't look. The Eagles are 4-0. We can say they're not playing their best football, which is true, but they're 4-0. And the Cowboys are coming off of another blowout win. They've had three of their four wins have been blowouts. And so we know they're good. They stubbed their toe in Arizona in the red zone more specifically. So the Giants, there's no margin for error here. I mean, they're competing to get that wild card spot. They're not going to win the division, I don't think, based on their talent level, based on everything. This is a game they have to win. They haven't played well at home. They got to play well. They've been on the road for 2 weeks. Bad game. They had a good second half against Arizona. Horrible. Really didn't play very well. Whether Barkley plays or not, the one thing about Seattle, you can move the ball on Seattle. And I thought last year in Seattle, the Giants played good. They turned it over twice on punt returns, which cost them the game. But they played well up there. They should have won that game.
And plus, they get some nice additions back to their offensive line as well for the Giants tonight.
There's a couple of troubling trends if you do like the Giants as it pertains to Danny Dimes in primetime. 1-11 straight up, not ideal. But I definitely agree with all of what you guys are saying, that this is, if not now, when territory for the New York Giants. Thanks, TG. Appreciate your time.
You got it. Thank you.
That's Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, hanging out with us on a Monday, as he always does, Michael. But I can't help it. I see those primetime numbers for Daniel Jones, and it does not make me want to run to the counter and back the Giants in this spot. We've got plenty more to discuss when we return here on the Lombardi Line as we recap the Sunday that was week four in the NFL. What does Michael think about Mac Jones' performance and how things will go moving forward for the New England Patriots? Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season is alive and well. ladies and gentlemen, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in on all of the NFL action with great offers every game day. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw five down on any of the week's epic matchups and walk away an instant winner. Football is more fun when you're in on the action, so download the app now and sign up with the code VEGAS. New customers bet just $5, get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Gotta use that code VEGAS. The crown is yours. An opportunity to do that tonight with Monday Night Football upon us as well. But as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line, we're continuing to break down some of the results we saw yesterday. And Michael, there were a couple of teams that I think we thought were better that just got torched yesterday, most notably the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's start in New England, because that thing started early in a loss to the Cowboys. It was 28-3 at halftime. Mac Jones had the interception and fumble. Both got returned for touchdowns. Another ugly interception in the third quarter. Bailey Zappe steps in. 38-3 final. It was the worst loss Bill Belichick has ever had as a head coach of the New England Patriots. How did you take it all in?
Well, this has been going on. I mean, they have not been able to not turn the ball over. They've been playing for the last 2 years very un-Belichick-like. They've lost games as opposed to avoid losing. And the other thing they've done is they've fallen behind. Let's just go over this year. I mean, in 9 of the last 10 games, they've fallen well behind their opponent. This year, they start out 16-0 against the Eagles, 17-3 against Miami, 18-3 against Dallas. And those scores are all self-inflicted wounds by turnovers, by mistakes made by the offense. And, you know, you're backed up. You know, you got a chance to, you're backed up, you're pinned back there. You fumble, they pick it up, touchdown. Next thing you know, then you're throwing a pick six and game's over. This team's not built to play from behind. And you take away your best player, you take away Stevenson, who's got to get going running the football. But when you're behind all the time, it's hard to do that. So, look, I tweeted this yesterday, and things can change dramatically. But when Mac Jones was coming out, you thought you were getting a guy who would make really good decisions. He would be accurate with the football. And as the level of comp improved, he would rise his level. And that hasn't really happened. And when you look at the last 9 games, last 15 games, he's 6-9 as a starter. Mm-hmm. And you could say, well, they don't have very good skill players around him. Okay, that's probably the line, and the skill players are probably, but some of these errors are just mistakes he's making. It has nothing to do with anything else other than his decision making. So that's going to have to improve. And now they're really almost that game where they've got decimated by injuries in their secondary. Every player with the last name of Jones who plays in their secondary is on IR. There's 3 of them, okay? And then, you know, they lose Gonzalez in the game. Mm-hmm. And so they're playing in that game from behind with Harold Bryant and with Miles Bryant and Jalen Mills and players that are not man-to-man cover people all the time. And when you do that, you've basically neutralized your defense. So no excuses. They played horribly. It's the worst game I've seen the Patriots play in 20-some years. And all the criticism that's coming towards them, they deserve. But the only way they can fix it is they got to stop giving games away. And Mac hasn't been able to do that.
Well, and that's the thing that stands out to me about the way we've seen Mac Jones perform, is because obviously, like, his rookie year, he comes in, he ends up performing pretty well. Then we look last year, takes a step back, but you don't want to blame him a whole lot because the coaching that he had on the offensive side of the ball wasn't exactly, you know, what you would hope to be for an offensive coaching staff. And so you thought in year 3, okay, let's start to take some steps forward. And instead of ascending, he's regressing, it seems like, even more. And the mental side of the game that you highlighted and the decision making that you anticipate that to be his strength hasn't been. And so I don't think this is too prisoner of the moment to say, but I wonder right now, if you're in that New England room right now and you're coming to the conclusion that, hey, Mac Jones just isn't the guy, but you're also kind of hamstrung to the situation. And it's not like Bailey Zappe has been great. He stepped in relief, and that didn't exactly go New England's way either. I listened to Michael Strahan yesterday on the postgame show on Fox, and he was saying that he can't remember the last time he looked at a Bill Belichick team at this point in the season and just thought, they don't have a chance. There's nothing there. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to feel that way. I don't think they've given you any indication there's something there. I mean, even the Jet game that they won 15-10, there's three or four plays in that game where they're trying to give the game back away. I mean, the third down throw, I heard Julian Edelman say it on the pregame show. You know, he throws a nine route out there. I don't know who he's throwing it to. And this game, to me, was a game where I thought he could play well. And he's got a first drive of the game. You know, Douglas makes a good run and catch, and then he's got Gesicki wide open in the back of the end zone. He's got to put the ball on him, and he overthrows him. And you say, well, he had some pressure in his – there's always pressure. There's always pressure coming from somebody, right?
Yep.
I think, to me, this is a – I think the Patriots are a lot like these other teams that drafted quarterbacks in that draft. San Francisco, Chicago, right? I mean, the Jets – and them, there's four first rounders, and none of them look like they are the future to where we're going to go. Now, things can change. Maybe Zach Wilson will become a better player as we move forward. But Mac has been, you see, here's where I think gets confused, Stormy. His rookie year's percentage of interceptions with Josh McDaniels as the OC was 2.5. Last year with Matt Patricia, it was 2.5. They're actually better offensively last year than they are this year offensively. No, but it doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit the narrative because everybody was saying Matt Patricia's not any good as an offensive play caller. Okay, they were better last year as an offense than they were this year.
It's absurd, and it shouldn't be that way. Mac Jones, by the way, from a betting perspective, 0-11 ATS, now has last 11 starts as an underdog. The Pats 3-9 against the number, their last 11 games, and two of the three of those ATS wins were against the Jets, who we know historically has been bad. You talk about the Patriots being a team that
you can't hide from those numbers, Stormy.
You can't hide from those.
I mean, like... when you gave me those, when you were giving me the trends this week, like, you can't hide from that, yeah. Right?
Sometimes.
Like, how do you do, you can't, I mean, it can't just be there's not enough good players around you.
You said that the Patriots are a team that's not built to come from behind. Neither are the Pittsburgh Steelers, who got embarrassed in Houston, falling 30-6. They were held without a touchdown. Total goes under the 42. Stroud has 306 yards, two touchdowns. Meanwhile, Kenny Pickett, just over 100 yards. He had to leave the game in the third quarter with a knee injury. Mike Tomlin said after the game, they need to make changes. Take a listen to him postgame.
They ran the football. And so, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for that, man. They ran that football with some backups in there. And stayed on schedule and minimized our opportunities. Hell yeah, we got to make some changes, man. That was an ugly product we put out there today. And so we're not going to do the same things and hope for a different outcome. What those changes are, man, we'll put together a plan in preparation this week.
Could among those changes be, Michael, Matt Canada looking for a job here soon?
I don't think that's the – I mean, everybody wants that, but who are they going to put in? Who's taking over? You know, nobody finishes the question, right? Who's taking over? I think this – look, that game was as bad as they played, and Kenny Pickett's hurt. He's going to miss. They got Trubisky going to start this week with going to Baltimore's coming to town this week, so that's going to be a challenge. But, look, here's the reality – why Mike is so mad is the same reason I'm so mad, because I originally had this game as my Hall & Oates play. I didn't want to touch it because I thought that the travel problems that they've had, they faced, and all the uncertainty going down to Houston, all that was going to be too much. And then I started analyzing the game, and there were no Texans offensive linemen that were going to play in the game. I mean, this is a good front in the Pittsburgh against a third-string offensive lineman in some of the key positions. It didn't matter, Stormy. It didn't matter. The handicap was completely wrong. They went and got it right after them, and they took the game to them from the first series of the game. They ran the ball. They threw it whenever they want. I mean, Stroud's got over 300 yards passing again. And he's throwing. You say, you know, the Patriots don't have anybody to throw the ball to. Well, who was catching the ball for the Texans? Nico Collins? He had over 150 yards receptions. Like, at some point, you know, the quarterback makes the receivers really good too, and you got to give it to Stroud. He's been outstanding.
Stroud, who is, by the way, the favorite now for Offensive Rookie of the Year, plus 175. He's thrown for 1,212 yards, second only to Cam Newton in his first four games for Carolina in 2011. So a great start for C.J. Stroud, who to me, like, wasn't really somebody that was on my radar among that batch of rookie quarterbacks to start the season successful. I thought that it was going to be a long, hard road. He was going to struggle, but he has looked poised. He has yet to throw an interception through four games, and he continues to impress. We have to step aside. Hour two of the Lombardi Line is coming up next. We will preview Monday Night Football and get Michael's biggest takeaways from the NFL Week 4 Sunday slate. Don't go anywhere.